Yo, what is up, listeners? Welcome back to the Low Traction Show. This is TG coming to you from Miami in March, which is a fucking horrible time to be in Miami. The spring break is upon us. All these college kids are descending on Miami Beach and Fort Lauderdale Beach area. Traffic is going to suck. There's going to be a bunch of festivals. If you live in Miami, if you're a local to this city, you realize this is probably the worst time ever to be in Miami. And if you live here like we do, it's a good idea not to visit the beaches during this month. And then always there's always the Ultra Music Festival, which is a huge deal in Miami that happens at the end of Miami, 3 days. Like, I believe it's 22nd through 24th, which once again is a good time to avoid that area where this music event is happening. It creates a lot of chaos. There's a lot of drugs, a lot of drunk people, late night music, loud and crowded. And it's not, you know, obviously, if you're into that kind of shit, you're young, you're energetic, you want to be part of that scene, perfect, great for you. I mean, this is your time. But for me, you know, I just turned 36 2 days ago. It's a fucking, my back hurts. Like, my baby sleeps at 10 o'clock, even way before that. We all go to bed at around 9:30 and 10:30. Good luck to you if you enjoy music and live events like the Ultra Music Festival and the spring break. Otherwise, stay the hell out of it. This week, I'm talking about one of the most personal topics that is really near and dear to my heart. And I want to start this week's proceedings by asking this following question. What do the Polestar 3, the BMW X2, the Honda Prologue, which is a brand new car, and the Toyota Venza first generation have in common? As you can tell, these cars come from different brands. They have different generations, different eras. And some of them are EVs, some of them may not be EVs, some of them are hybrids, some of them are pure ICE. So what do they have in common, right? I think the answer to this, obviously, I'm trying to provide the answer to my own question. And the answer somewhat lies in the design language of these cars. You see, these are modern, relatively modern crossover slash SUVs on the market these days. And they are all kind of shaped like a station wagon or an estate. If you are from the different side of the pond and you call it estate over there, for sure, I think it's a better name, actually. But if you call it like station wagon in America, in North America specifically, that makes a lot of sense too. So these cars are all shaped like station wagons, but they are not called a station wagon. They are called an SUVs. And then they are marketed as such. The reason why they are being marketed as SUVs as opposed to station wagons, which is what they are, is the main topic for today. So we're going to go into why station wagons, the name, is sort of a taboo these days in the car market. How we have got into this position where, you know, especially in America, station wagons were the king of the roads back in the 60s and 70s and all the way through the 90s, but they fell out of love amongst the American consumers in the late 90s and early 2000s all the way through today. And particularly, we want to discuss a little bit on why station wagons are still a very good idea these days to have, but car manufacturers are basically abandoning the idea together with the abandonment of sedans. You know, a lot of car markets are not making sedans anymore. They focus on trucks, SUVs, crossovers, and minivans. And station wagon is just the proverbial baby that got thrown out with the bathwater. That's just my opinion. I'm gonna tell you why. But also, I understand station wagons are not for everybody. And we're gonna, you know, after you listen to this episode, we're gonna come to the same conclusion. But let's save that for later, and let's get into it. Like I said, station wagon used to be the king of the road back in the 1950s and 1960s in America, all the way through the early 1990s. When the Second World War ended, I mean, this is not going to be one of those history episodes, but I just want to give you a little bit of background. When the World War II ended, America entered into a generation called the Baby Boomers. As the name suggests, this is a generation, this is a period of time of high population growth. American families, after coming back from the war, after winning the war, they were in a good, very good mood. And then, you know, the economy was booming. People were happy. They were getting back. And then they were making babies, right? The family in America grew in size significantly during the 1950s. And then people all kind of moved into the suburbs, moving into the big McMansions of America. Everybody purchased large cars for their families. And at this point, station wagons were really the most practical kind of car for these families, right? If you have 3 to 4 kids, maybe even more, the station wagon of that time can easily hold up to, I mean, some station wagons, the large full-size ones, can hold up to like 9 people. Obviously, safety regulations were very, very loose back then. I mean, you don't even need seatbelts. They have rear-facing seats in the back. They have sometimes, you know, bench seats in the back. You can sit on opposite side of the car facing each other. And it's literally just putting your kids in the trunk. And there's no safety measures. It was a different time, obviously. But that's not to diminish the overall dominance of station wagons. SUVs, on the contrary, back in the 1950s and 1960s, were pure utility vehicles. They were work vehicles. Back then, SUVs obviously existed. If you think of the original International Harvester Scout, or if you think of the original Ford Bronco, those were pure work vehicles, almost like farm vehicles. If you think about it, International Harvester was a tractor manufacturer. Ford made the Bronco because they want to compete in that segment, but this was completely tailored to the off-road community and also for people who work on farms and work in remote areas where the road condition is horrible and you definitely need a four-wheel drive plus a transfer case to handle these kind of situations. And those 4x4s were by no means luxury or comfort vehicles. They didn't even have some of the most basic comfort features today. Like they don't have, you know, for example, air conditioning. They don't have, you know, automatic windows. They don't have, you know, forget about leather seats and all these luxury trimmings. They were really basic vehicles. Whoever has the pleasure of driving them in their lifetime will tell you those old 4x4s from the 1960s or 1950s were literally like tractors. Very bad handling, but they can handle, they can definitely take care of the dirt, they can take care of muddy and off-road situations. That's their sole purpose of existence. On the contrary, the station wagons were actually family vehicles. A minivan wasn't a thing in the American psyche. So station wagons back then was a staple for American families. And they were kind of popular around the world as well. I mean, the word estate was used because it is literally for people who are driving on weekends or on holidays from their home in the city to the estate they have in the countryside. And then when they go there, they tend to carry a lot of stuff with them, right? It's for a weekend trip or for a short vacation. So they carry hunting gears, fishing gears, you know, luggages for the family for the entire weekend. So you need a lot of space in the back of the car, in the trunk or in the boot. And then station wagon was the natural sort of evolution of car at that point to satisfy all these needs. And that's a little bit of history to station wagons slash estates here in the Western world. Obviously, you know, this is not really relevant for anybody listening from China because fucking there's no car industry back then. There was a car industry, but there's no sort of family car ownership back then. So moving forward, specifically putting everything in the sort of North American context, station wagons were still very popular moving into the 70s and 80s. However, they were kind of getting into the image. They were turning into a very sort of stereotypical suburban soccer mom kind of vehicle. So remember, this is a family car. A lot of people, especially back in the 70s and 80s, would associate station wagons with a family car that moms typically drive to take their kids around, to take their kids to school, pick them up, and take them to soccer practice. Hence the name soccer mom vehicle, right? So this is kind of like the stigma that is associated with station wagon in the later stage. They were very practical. They were very large. They were not typically sporty. They were not fashionable in any particular sense. And they were, you know, like I said, associated with soccer moms. That's when I think the whole idea of the station wagon lost a lot of its appeal because they became very old school. And it's not associated with anything that is sporty or exciting. It's basically just a utilitarian car that families drive around and carry a lot of shit in it. Needless to say, with the advent of the minivan in the late 80s and early 90s, largely thanks to our guy, Lee Iacocca, the genius who made the minivan such a popular household staple, station wagons were effectively completely eliminated by minivans. Minivans took over as the predominant family vehicle. It is a little bit higher in terms of the ride height and in terms of headroom. It has a lot more luggage capacity in the back. It usually seats 7 comfortably. And these days, back in the 90s, you know, safety standards were a little bit more robust, obviously. So minivan were somehow perceived as a little bit more safe. I guess a lot of people associate with sitting a little bit higher, sort of having a better vantage point in the car with being safe or being secure on the road, which obviously is a personal choice and may or may not be correct, or, you know, may or may not be based on scientific facts, because arguably higher center of gravity probably equals to worse handling and then, you know, probably higher rollover risk. But that's neither here nor there. Car sales, as you can find out these days or throughout history, is pretty much about marketing and perception. If a car is being sold to the general public as a very cool option and is being perceived as such, it's definitely going to gain popularity. On the contrary, if a car is being perceived as old school, as being uncool, as being the soccer mom car, then it typically loses its appeal amongst young people. No matter what kind of industry, especially these kind of mass market products such as cars, music, or sports, you always cater to the younger audience. You always try to capture the attention of the up-and-coming younger guys, right? Because in time, you know, without you even knowing it, these young people are going to be the core of our society. And by that, it basically means the people with the highest potential to spend. Obviously, the baby boomers and the Generation X's and, you know, slightly older people, they have savings, they're a little bit more affluent, and then they usually delve into more niche market cars, right? That's why you see in America a lot of retirees, like silver hair older gentlemen driving like a Corvette or a two-seater Mercedes or like a BMW convertible, right? Or even like Bentleys. So these are typically two-seater, you know, think about it, two-seater convertible, you know, roadsters. These are very sporty cars, but they're also very luxury cars. And then a lot of them are typically purchased, you know, by older people who are empty nesters. They don't need 4 seats anymore. They don't need a large trunk. As long as the cargo capacity is large enough to fit 2 bags of golf clubs, they're happy. And then they carry themselves sometimes with their lady or, you know, with their significant other. That's about it. You know, just going around town, going to play some golf games and then going to grocery shopping, probably getting to a restaurant for dinner, maybe a little bit of road trip here and there. But that's really it. I mean, that's a very niche market, and it's predominantly older generation people. Obviously, a lot of young people get into that as part of the enthusiast market, right? So a lot of people buy into for the sort of two-seater sports cars because they are sporty, they're fun to drive. But then the spending power on average, obviously there are a lot of rich young people too, but the spending power, if you think about it, for a younger guy in their 20s is significantly lower than an older gentleman in their retirement age in the 60s or, you know, early 70s. So that's just a long-winded way of saying OEMs, car manufacturers, are spending a lot of marketing dollars and effort trying to capture the attention and, you know, create a positive perception amongst young people. Even though they may not buy your car today, they may look at your car as a aspirational sort of product or aspirational purchase for future. And once they have that power, they're going to buy it. That's the importance of marketing to your audience. Obviously, you know, that's just how things work. That's just how things work these days, which is a little bit sad, a little bit unfortunate. The European wagons or estates are actually typically better looking, if you think about it. I mean, my personal opinion, they are better looking cars. The long roof and the, I'm not a big fan of the sort of the sedan shape, to be honest. Obviously, it is the quintessential car shape, but I still feel like a wagon, you know, with a very low roof, very long roof, and a straight up and down rear actually looks pretty cool. Some of the best looking cars in history are race cars. And then there's also a subgenre of cars that are made into either station wagons or shooting brakes. I mean, I don't have to go into the details about what is a shooting brake, what is a station wagon. There's this, you know, some subtle differences, but mostly in the number of doors, I think. But, you know, we're not trying to distract ourselves a little bit too far from the main topic today. So in my personal opinion, aesthetically, I think station wagons are actually more advanced. But the unfortunate truth about today's car market is station wagon, the concept is, you know, very far gone. It's been left behind in the 90s, and it has been labeled as uncool ever since. Even though a lot of these European participants, like the station wagon E-Class AMG wagon from Mercedes, or the BMW 3 Series wagon, or, you know, a few years ago, Jaguar actually launched a XF wagon in America, which probably sold in single digits. Those cars were obviously jets, so they were pretty expensive. But new cars were being offered with like 20, 30 grand off the sticker price, and then still nobody wanted to buy them. Obviously, Jaguar being Jaguar has the, you know, reputation of not very reliable. And speaking of reliability, if you look across the market spectrum, the manufacturing spectrum, the Japanese car manufacturers obviously already just completely gave up on the concept of station wagon. As late as 2000 and I think the 2000s, Acura was still making a station wagon. Caveat here. Before I say anything stupid, before you call me stupid, right? I understand Subaru has making station wagon, i.e. the Outback, ever since they existed, and they still make them today. However, what I'm about to say is still probably true. I think amongst all the Japanese car makes, Acura was the last one who actually made a station wagon, with a proper station wagon. Outback is great, right? The Outback is a great vehicle, but I don't think it's a fucking station wagon, to be honest with you. It is so fucking high off the ground. The clearance is high. The body is high. The roof line is so high. It almost is taller than all of the vehicles I mentioned in the opening of this show. It is taller than it is definitely taller than all the station wagons on the market these days. You know, Mercedes, BMW, Audi, Volvo. It's probably even taller than the Polestar that is coming out, the sort of station wagon looking Polestar 3. So in my argument, I don't even think Outback is a station wagon. It is a proper crossover SUV these days, sort of disguised as a station wagon, which doesn't make a lot of sense because a lot of other people are trying to do the opposite, right? Like I mentioned in the very beginning, all these car manufacturers are making effectively station wagons, but marketing them as crossovers. This is just a stupid shit, right? So it's kind of like playing into the perceptions of consumers. Consumers think station wagons are uncool, and they think crossovers is the vehicle of choice these days. Everybody drives crossovers, so I want a crossover too. But they are just station wagons. They look exactly like a station wagon. They're just not labeled as a station wagon. And you know what? That sucks for the consumers, and it's actually works better for the car manufacturers, because for a station wagon, they are usually priced, you know, in parallel with the sedan counterparts on the same platform. For example, the Acura TSX station wagon is probably the same or very similar in pricing as the similar sort of sister sedan product. But these days, the crossovers are priced as if they are full-on 4x4 SUVs. So they're more expensive than a sedan. Like Toyota, the RAV4 is more expensive than, for example, a Corolla. And Corolla, if they make a Corolla wagon, I'm sure it probably doesn't look very pretty, but none of the Toyota products look pretty. You know, that's just not their forte. But I'll bet you anything, if they make actually a Corolla station wagon, as opposed to making a Corolla Cross, which is basically just a little bit of a crossover, you know, loaf of bread on four wheels kind of thing, which is cheap, but it's going to be more expensive than a station wagon, because you just use a little bit more material, you just use a little bit more labor, and the platform is pretty much the same, and they just sell for a higher price, which is genius for the car manufacturers, and they can make a higher profit margin on the crossover than, you know, if they do on the station wagon. But it kind of sucks for consumers, because you basically achieve, other than headroom, I think headroom is probably one of the two most important metrics that you are giving up, right? One is probably headroom. The other one is probably cargo capacity. By giving up those two, you have a much more sleek looking car, and you also gain a lot of cool factor, I think, because whatever is rare is inevitably cool. And then that's kind of my thing. Like the very first vehicle I bought was a Saab station wagon. Not only did I go for the station wagon, I also went for a manufacturer that was defunct at the point. I still own it. I still love it. I still think it is the best looking Saab out there. It is better looking than a lot of the modern cars these days. It's already 16 years old. The design still holds very well. I think the design was still very timeless. And a lot of station wagons are like that. Some of the Mercedes products from the 90s or early 2000s, they still look great today, especially the station wagons. If you look at the Volvos, the Volvo V90 station wagon, not the cross-country sort of raised suspension shit, but the standard V90 station wagon is a super long, very sleek looking vehicle. And it's super rare to find it. And the manufacturers don't even, the Volvo dealership don't even want to mention they have that car. They don't want to even sell that car to you. They'll sell you easily, happily, they'll sell you a V90 cross country because it's higher, it's elevated. It's a little bit, you know, higher suspension. A lot of people perceive that as a little bit safer and, you know, easier to drive in the cities where there's a lot of potholes. In a city that rains a lot, there's a lot of puddles. Sure, but there's nothing wrong with driving the standard Volvo V90. And then you have to beg and plead and cry for it in order for the dealers to actually create an order for you on that vehicle. So the manufacturers are just making it very, very difficult. Number one, by not making them. Number two, even when they make them, they don't want to sell them to you. So that's just the ridiculous part about perception, once again, marketing, and you know how the manufacturers are calculating their demand based on what they think is the market, what they think is the perception of their brand, what they think is the perception of each car segment, and what they think is the perception of a station wagon versus a crossover SUV. I'm kind of going in circles here, but what I'm trying to say is it may not be a bad thing, right? So for lovers of station wagons such as myself, to remain in this genre and to keep our enjoyment of these very unique, very rare cars, I think, ironically, we kind of need it to be a little bit unpopular. We kind of need it to be the unicorns of the world, sort of the smaller niche products of the world. If you drive a Mercedes AMG E60s, what is it called? E63S AMG, you automatically have my respect. If you drive a M5 or, you know, M3 wagon in Europe, obviously not in America because it's not available here, you automatically get my respect. The car that I don't quite get is the Audi R6, which is, you know, imported into America. And then, you know, I've seen a few on the road because they are obviously very cool, very fast, very powerful. One thing I don't get about them is I think it's more about the owners, right? So whoever in Miami, at least, whoever had a opportunity to buy one of those cars, they always modify them. They always change the rims. They always modify the exhaust. They try to change the wheels. They lower them. They add a bunch of carbon on it. I mean, that's just a little bit gauche, you know? I think you can do better than that. I mean, the original form and design was pretty good and it was already quite aggressive. Audis to me never were the most aggressive looking cars on the road, right? It doesn't have to be very aggressive looking. I think Audi should just take a page from Volvo, basically. Really, like try to be a little bit more understated. Although Volvo doesn't really have too much performance creed these days. They used to, right? They used to make really hot wagons, like the, you know, V60 Polestars and whatnot. They were not the fastest, you know, and neither is the Audi R6. So I think you should be a little bit more classy, especially the owners of these cars. You can also try to be a little bit classy, a little bit understated. It is a station wagon. Don't forget, the station wagon is a very utilitarian, very practical car in the first place. Everything else, the performance, the, you know, 0 to 100, the fucking suspension, the tires, the rims, the aerodynamics, all of that should come after. None of that is your primary reason for buying a station wagon. Your primary reason for buying a station wagon, in my mind, should be number one, it's practical. Number two, it's pretty. Number three, you just don't want to give in to a crossover and an SUV. I think those three reasons should be sufficient for you to consider a station wagon. And most of these European products, as far as I can tell, are still being very carefully thought out, like the Porsche products from Panamera and also from the Taycan product lines. The station wagon or sports tourismo lines are very gorgeous looking, and they are still very carefully designed and carefully planned. I presume they are still pretty big in Europe, station wagons, the concept. But I saw some news, right? Station wagon used to be, I think, the country with the highest market share of station wagons were traditionally the Nordics, like Sweden, you know, Norway, and some of the Western European countries. But even for those countries, the sales of estates or station wagons have been rapidly declining. I think over the past few years, Swedish market share, station wagon used to take up like more than 10%, close to 20%. Now I think it's in single digits. So it is in decline in a lot of these markets. These numbers don't lie, but like I said, a lot of that is manufacturers' self-inflicted pain. It's basically a self-fulfilling prophecy because the manufacturers think consumers don't want the station wagon. And they basically stop making the station wagon, stop planning the station wagon, stop making careful and thoughtful designs for these station wagons, which makes them even less attractive for consumers. And then obviously it creates a very vicious circle wherein nothing will be sold. None of the station wagons will be sold. But after all, I think the station wagon as it is, I'm fine with it. You know, I'm fine with station wagon not being the king of the road anymore, not being the predominant, most popular choice of family vehicles anymore. But who knows? History always kind of repeats itself and then goes on a cycle. There's always a little bit of, oh, things going full circle and coming back after decades. Fashion is one of these things. Real estate is always very cyclical. As we know, I'm in this industry. Hopefully, or maybe not, I'm a little bit split on what to think of if there's ever going to be a comeback for station wagons. But there's genuinely a possibility of a station wagon renaissance. Like, just imagine in about 10 to 20 years where EVs dominate the road, maybe 50% of the road, not 100% of the cars on the market in 10, 20 years. That's probably way too early for that. But imagine a new kind of car market in 10, 20 years where people may potentially get tired of the bulbous, monolithic looks of these crossover SUVs and 4x4s, and all of a sudden they realize, oh shit, I want something that handles a little bit better. You know, with all these EV drivetrains, cars starting at 400 horsepower, going all the way to over 1,000, it is almost detrimental to the car itself, to the powertrain itself, to have a non-handling car, i.e. a large, heavy SUV with super high center of gravity. I enjoy driving my 7-seater Volvo SUV, but I would never be able to chuck this thing around a corner and just feel very safe about that. It's never going to give you that dependable, very truckable, very dynamic handling and road holding capability that a typical sedan or a station wagon will give you. I think at the end of the day, people's tastes change over time. People's preference evolves. And the station wagon as a form of transportation, personal mobility, is actually a very good solution to a lot of the problems that we face today. We commute, we need to carry some people around, we need to carry some stuff around. And station wagons, don't forget, because they're based on a sedan platform and they are a little bit lighter in terms of weight and a little bit sort of uses a little bit fewer material, metal, plastic, whatever, to create, to manufacture, the cost will be slightly lower than their SUV counterparts, which will drive the sale price down a little bit for consumers too. A lot of Americans are complaining these days, oh, I want a large SUV, I want a large truck, but also I can't afford my payments. Interest rate is so damn high, I can't afford it. Oh, I want a car that does 30 miles per gallon, but I also don't want to drive a 4-cylinder, 2-liter engine. Oh, I want a car that can carry 5 people plus 2 dogs, but also I don't want to drive a station wagon. I want to drive a truck. I want to fucking drive the abomination that is a SUV coupe. I think people will probably wise up to the idea that the solution was right in front of us, right in front of our eyes for the longest time. We just make the snap judgment to deem these station wagons as uncool and abandon them very flippantly. At this point, based on the current market conditions, I don't even think this is necessarily a bad thing. You know, we get to enjoy the station wagons as the rare cars on the road. We enjoy the uniqueness of these vehicles that we own. Whenever I see another Saab station wagon or any station wagon on the road, I kind of already do a double take. in my mind, I'm always having a little bit more respect for these drivers because I think they made the logical and the sensible choice. I think that's enough babbling about a topic that rarely any people cares about, especially in this market. And this is probably old school and doesn't really relate to any of our consumer trends of the day or any of the hot topics of the day. But I do think this is a topic that is really near and dear to my heart. And I just wanted to get it off my chest because I've been thinking about this thing for a long time. I never really spent any real time in my podcast, in my show, to talk about this subject. Station wagon is arguably one of my favorite type of cars, and we never gave it any love or any shout out, which is what I'm doing today. Hopefully this is not as boring as I think it will be. And if you love station wagons like I do, leave a comment, share the show, share your story about your station wagons and why you think they are great. Or alternatively, if you think station wagons suck, definitely leave a comment. Let me know why you think so. You know, I would definitely want to understand from a consumer's perspective. If you are an engineer, even better, from an engineering point of view, why you think station wagons are not the popular choice anymore, are no longer the popular choice, and why they are in decline across the world. And even though some manufacturers are still hanging on to these concepts, what do you think will happen in the next 10, 15, 20 years? Will they have a major comeback or will they just simply disappear? So that's some listener questions / debate that we can have. And hopefully we can continue this conversation or discussion sometime in the future. Until then, have a great day. Drive safe out there. Whatever car you drive, enjoy them on the road. And I'll talk to you very, very soon. Hopefully within the next week or two. Bye.